Collaboration is something that's so important to guitarist Sharon Isbin. She has looked for so many different opportunities to work with different artists. And for the first time last year, she had a chance to travel to India. And she fell in love with it. And she discovered that, well, a lot of the music she was already creating had connections to India. It was an exciting and, well, kind of scary experience, as you'll find out more in this edition of New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher. I'm talking with guitarist Sharon Isbin. Sharon, are you in New York City?
I am in New York City, the Big Apple.
So how are you doing amid the COVID-19 pandemic? I mean, so much has changed and New York City is right in the thick of it.
I'm very lucky in that I live one block from the Hudson River. So I just have to tumble out of the building with my mask on, and then I take the mask off and I run along the river, and it's just absolutely glorious. The trees have been in bloom. So for me, getting exercise and being out in nature, running several miles multiple times a week, has been just the greatest kind of reinvigorating inspiration. I've been doing my teaching with my Juilliard students remotely and having meetings online with faculty that way as well. So there hasn't really been an enormous amount of change other than the flurry of concerts that are being canceled for the summer. So that's disappointing, of course, but we all have to stay safe and keep connections going, because that is what unites us all. And you know what? you're going to laugh at this. But for me, what's kind of unusual is that for the last 17 years, on every single airplane flight that I have taken and every train ride, I have worn an N95 mask for 17 years, the entire flight, whether it's 21 hours or 5 hours or 8 hours. And I haven't shaken hands for 22 years. That started because I happened to be in Los Angeles for a concert, was having a late lunch, and noticed one other table of people in the restaurant. And it was Ollie Newsom, the late composer, conductor, sitting at a table with Peter Serkin and Takemitsu's widow. And I went over to say hi to Ollie, and he shook my hand. He's a big guy, and he shook it, and I felt the bones crunch. And for the next 4 hours, my hand hurt. Fortunately, it stopped hurting just in time for the concert. But I thought, you know, if a conductor can do that, I can't expect anybody else to be sensitive to the idea of not injuring you in a greeting. So I decided from that moment on, I would never shake hands. And you know what? It's also hygienically a much smarter thing. In Japan, they bow. They don't want to touch your hand. Why should we be spreading germs all over the place? So it, for me, is kind of like, welcome to my world. I get it with the masks. That makes sense.
Well, it's, you know, it's like now that's like before it, people might have responded one way to you, like, oh, you know.
Yeah, it was made fun of. And
like,
if you don't believe me, if you go
sense.
To the movie, the documentary Troubadour, you'll see a scene where they filmed, I was on an airplane. This guy is out cold next to me. And I have my mask on and my eye shades. I was asleep. I didn't know they were filming this. Living proof that this is how I traveled. And in those days, people would either flee the seat next to me if they could find somewhere else to go because they thought I was, you know, a weirdo, or they would get angry.
Or contagious.
Yeah. But now it makes sense. And I really do believe that for concerts, for us to gather together for public events, people should wear masks and will be required to do so, because that makes sense. And one little thing, if you do buy an N95 mask, if you want it to be really comfortable, just stretch out the little rubber bands in the back with both of your hands. And it will fit much better and you won't get a headache.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I'm wondering what you might have discovered about yourself that was kind of surprising as your life has changed, not dramatically, as you were saying, but some things have changed. And I'm wondering what you might have discovered about yourself in this process so far.
I actually love this time alone, and I'm really able to complete some projects that I had procrastinated about before. I'm glad, Julie, that you and I can talk remotely in this fashion with a microphone that I purchased, sort of creating my own home studio so I can do interviews all around the world. I'm also, I think, a bit cushioned by the experience of isolation because I'm so excited about the two new recordings of mine that have just come out. And that gives me an opportunity to share this music with people all over the world, even though I can't be physically playing on a stage at this point.
I know collaboration is so important to you. So many of your recordings and the music you play is all about finding those unique collaborations. I'm wondering how you see that changing in the aftermath of this pandemic or during it, because we really don't know how long this will go on.
That's true. It is a big question mark. So I think that we will all have to be very flexible. There have been some remarkably creative things that have been happening on the on-screen world, whether it is a Juilliard creating a bolero that used students from all their disciplines, really quite beautiful and special. I've seen other projects that have been equally remarkable. So I think it's going to open up actually new worlds because we are resourceful. And I don't know what direction that will take me, but I'm sure it will be something that is unexpected and something that I will find a process of discovery.
Your recording Strings for Peace is another one of those collaborative efforts with Amjad Ali Khan and two of his sons. Why was it so important to have this collaboration?
It was something that began in a very organic way more than 10 years ago when I received out of the blue an email from Amjad Ali Khan. He is considered a national treasure in India and is part of the lineage of a family that has created the sarod, the instrument that he plays, and its style of playing now through seven different generations when you count his two brilliant sons, Aman Ali Bangash and Ayan Ali Bangash. And he wrote to me the idea of getting together, meeting, becoming acquainted. In the back of his mind, he wanted a collaboration. And what evolved was a friendship over this period of time. We didn't really know how to make the collaboration happen because I didn't play Indian music, though I loved it. I'd been listening to ragas and sitar since college, and he didn't play the guitar, nor did he actually notate music. This is an oral tradition handed down through the generations. And then we would get together, I would hear them in concert, and we would explore just sort of trying to improvise together, but it really needed someone who could transcend all of these different worlds, classical, improvisation, Indian music. And suddenly he did find a collaborator who could do this, who could notate it, and who could explore the imagination that he had combining the guitar with the sarod. I didn't really know this was happening. I just knew every year I'd get a message saying, we're working on it. It'll soon. So in December of 2018, his son Ayan wrote to me and said, we're very close to finishing this. In fact, open up your inbox. There are some ragas there waiting for you to hear. So I did. And I just loved them. They were so beautiful. It really, really touched me. And he said, that's good because we've already booked a tour for you to do with us in India in February. I said, but that's in 2.5 months. How is that going to happen? He said, well, halls were available. We just decided to go with it. So I had just been planning all of January to do focus on the recording I was making with the Pacifica String Quartet. We did an album that came out in August 2019 called Souvenirs of Spain and Italy. The centerpiece of that was a very complex work by Mario Castelnuovo Tedesco, his quintet for guitar and strings, plus music of Vivaldi and Boccherini. So there was really no time in January that I had to start to learn ragas. It ended ended up being a very condensed period of time. I was able to study the demo tapes that he sent me and the scores and just immerse myself in this process and come to India a few days early in February, where it was kind of 24/7 nonstop coaching with them. And it was really a bit scary, I have to say, because when I left to go to the airport, I really wasn't exactly sure how this was all going to work out, but I knew that I was going to make it work. And I just put myself into it 1,000%. And an amazing thing happened, which was the first night I was on stage, I opened the concert with a solo Spanish piece. And that Spanish piece happened to be Asturias, a work by Albéniz. And in the middle of that, I suddenly had this realization that the music I was playing came from a very fascinating history of India and travel and different lands. And when you start to think about it, the Spanish melismatic style of the cante hondo, of the flamenco singers, is part of course, the flamenco tradition. And where did that come from? You have the gypsies from India who migrated across different lands. Many of them landed in Spain and became part of what was that movement of flamenco music. And it all just came together in that moment as I was performing on stage. The sense of familiarity, and I felt this just visceral cosmic energy. It was really quite a revelation to see new insight into music I played all my life from Spain coming through a different lens. Coupled with that, for me, it was exciting to go to India, because since the age of 17, I've been practicing transcendental meditation, a very simple meditation process that's not religious. You just sit in a chair for 20 minutes twice a day and you have this amazing stress release and inner focus and accesses your inner creativity. And where did that come from? Well, hundreds, if not thousands of years evolution from India. So to be able to journey to the land of a practice that I have found to be so helpful in my life, to be there, to feel the music, to suddenly discover Spain in their music, to learn about how the improvisation that I had to do on my own instrument and imitating ways that on a fretless instrument, the sarod, which again is played with the plectrum, it's metal, to find some way to bring the guitar to that world. Experiences that I'd had playing with jazz musicians who improvise. It drew on my experience of studying for 10 years with the great Bach scholar and keyboard artist Rosalind Turek, and the whole concept of improvisation, of embellishment. So all of these things were coming together. One of the things that was really important in this collaboration was the tabla players. And we have a marvelous one on this album, Amit Kaptekar, who studied with some extraordinary tabla players and has brought that to his playing and his inner spirit. And that sense of rhythm is what really informs everything. Now, before you get to these rhythmic fast parts, there's this whole exploratory section. So that is part of, I think, kind of a reverence that happens in the music, where there is no rhythmic component and the musicians are all improvising.
I'm looking looking at the titles of the four pieces that are on this recording, and there's a title, and then there's, is it an explanation of the style or the roots from which it comes?
The titles are actually evocative. So if you look at the first one, By the Moon, it's a style called the Behag, and you can get into very descriptive elements of that. You're talking about the sharp fourth and a natural scale and the alaps and the jors and the talas. It's less of important, I think, to a listener than just the immersion into the music itself. And just disbanding from any Western preconceptions of what music might be like and just letting yourself experience something that's new and different. The second one is quite different from the other three ragas. It's called Love Avalanche. And they call it a light classical, and we're talking about North Indian classical music. That's what all of this is coming from. And the different scales, the Phrygian, the modes, all of that. But if you listen to it, it has just a mystical quality to it. And I was insistent we include this one on the album because it was so different and so special and one that really moved me. When I first heard it, I listened to it over and over and over again in the sample that they had sent me just because it was magical. It really was. All of these, by the way, are written by Amjad Ali Khan, and the collaborator they found to notate this and to find expression on the guitar is a fellow named Kyle Paul, who had been studying with Amjad Ali Khan at the Bloomington University in Indiana in a special residency program that Khan was doing on Indian music. And Kyle played jazz guitar, he played a bit of classical, and he was a composer, and he had been learning about Indian classical music. So what could be more perfect than that? I'm very grateful to him for making this happen.
What was most memorable for you in putting together these releases?
It was, well, memorable on two levels. One was the challenge of it, because it was doing actually three albums in 9 months, and then wanting to follow up on the India tour from February 2019 with an album. Fortunately, the guys all happened to be here in New York. They live in India, but they happened to be in New York for a week in April. And I said, maybe we could find a day and go into a studio. I had to find the studio. I executive produced both of these albums, and I found the studio. We actually didn't have a producer at that time. There wasn't enough advanced lead time, so all four of us actually produced the album, chose the takes and the cuts, and then a brilliant mixer, engineer, editor came into the picture, Sai Shravanam in India, who has done all kinds of work, both as a tabla player and as a producer for Bollywood and North Indian classical music, everything. He was just incredible what he did with the raw audio that we gave him. And that was a learning process as well. So to be in the forefront of the producing side of things, as well as the executive producing, was really interesting. So it was really coming together in very different ways with the challenges of putting this all together, making it happen. I hardly got any sleep for a long period of time there because there just wasn't time.
And it's a good thing you meditate, because that's like kind of the next best thing to sleeping, right?
It really is. It did help a lot, because I find with meditation, I get twice as much life. You know, that afternoon at 4 or 5 p.m. when you're kind of exhausted and you don't know how you can do much more. Well, I do 20 minutes of meditation, I'm ready for a whole new day. So it really has been a tremendous asset to my life.
When we started this conversation, you said that the advent of this pandemic has now allowed you to quit procrastinating on some things. And I'm thinking, what? You just did 3 recordings in 9 months. What could you possibly be procrastinating about?
I probably shouldn't say this, but I had to catch up on a few years of taxes, which I'd had no time to do. And in doing so, I had to find a creative way of delivering the paperwork. So I would jog 5 miles along the Hudson for each of the years to deliver the papers to my accountant. And actually that turned out to be thrilling, because all the trees were in bloom, the cherry trees, the magnolia, the dogwood. It was just exquisite, this run. That was the only good part about the experience. But it, you know, you have to find something good in everything, right? And now this weight has been relieved from me. I feel liberated. I'm all caught up, and I can actually start to do some fun things.
Why did you call this recording Strings for Peace?
The title Strings for Peace came from Amjad Ali Khan. So many of the concerts and collaborations that he has done with his sons have evolved around the concept of trying to bring peace and harmony to the world. And that certainly is all the more poignant now when you think of what's happening in India. There's a mass level of disruption of different sects that are in conflict with each other, and religious persecution, and the idea of having music being a unifying force and trying to bring that message of harmony to people all over the world is so important. We have that going on in our own country right now. It's all over the world. It's a sense of discombobulation and of strife. And when people are together feeling and emoting music in a way that is soothing, comforting, inspiring, beautiful, transcendent, that can take us to another place that is much more enriching and much more positive. I really can't wait for the moment we can all be back together again in concert halls. I don't know when that will be or what format it will take, but it is so important to feel connected to the people we are making music for. And it is heartbreaking to see the tragedy that has unfolded all over the world for so many people. I'm so grateful for all the healthcare workers and the people involved in every aspect of the support industry, whether it's people in grocery stores helping us to have food, whether it's people growing the food and collecting it, and the healers of the world. That is really remarkable what they are doing. And if this music can in any way give them extra strength and healing and comfort, I would be so gratified.
Strings for Peace, a mystical exploration of Indian classical music with guitarist Sharon Isbin. If you're enjoying new classical tracks, the best thing that you can do for the show is to tell somebody else about it, help spread the word, and take a moment to rate and review us on your podcasting app. Thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode of New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher.